Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Chaivam Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Dato Jayamudirayat Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Utamashlokir Bhaktir Bhavatina Ishtiki. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Translations and Purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, 3rd Canto, 8th Chapter, 22nd Verse. Kalena sa aja purushayusha abhipravrita yogena virudha bodha svayam tadanta vidaye avapatam pashyata apashyata yat na purvam. Kalena soja purushayushabi. Kalena soja purushayushabi. Pravritta yogena virudha bodha. Pravritta yogena virudha bodha. Svayam taranta hridaye vibhatam. Svayam taranta hridaye vibhatam. Pashyata pashyata yan purvam. Pashyata pashyata yan purvam. Kalena soja purushaya ushabi. Pravritta yogena virudha bodha. Svayam taranta hridaye vibhatam. Pashyata pashyata yanna purvam. Kalena soja purushayushabi. Pravritta yogena virudha bodha. Svayam taranta hridaye vibhatam. Pashyata pashyata yanna purvam.
Kalena soja purushayushabhi.
Kalena, in due course of time, sa, he, aja, the self-born Brahma, purushayusha, by the duration of his age, abhipravrita, being engaged, yogena, in meditation. Virudha, develop. Bodha, intelligence. Svayam, automatically. Tadantaridaye, in the heart. Avabhatam, manifested. Apashyata, saw. Apashyata, did see. Yat, which. Na, not. Purvam, before. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. At the end of Brahma's 100 years, when his meditation was complete, he developed the required knowledge. And as a result, he could see in his heart the Supreme within himself, whom he could not see before with the greatest endeavor, responsibly. At the end of Brahma's 100 years, when his meditation was complete, he developed the required knowledge. And as a result, he could see in his heart the Supreme within himself, who he could not see before with the greatest endeavor, purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord can be experienced only through the process of devotional service and not by one's personal endeavor in mental speculation. The age of Brahma is calculated in terms of divya years, which are distinct from the solar years of human beings. The divya years are calculated in Bhagavad Gita 8.17, Sahasra Yuga Parantam Ahuryad. Brahma's one day is equal to 1,000 times the aggregate of four yugas, calculated to be 4,300,000 years. On that basis, Brahma meditated for 100 years before he could understand the supreme cause of all causes. And then he wrote the Brahma Samhita, which is approved and recognized by Lord Chaitanya, and in which he sings, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. One has to wait for the mercy of the Lord before one can either render service unto him or know him as he is. Om Agnati Miranda Sagaranjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gravenama Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tarati Svapadantikam. From this verse, it appears that one may have to wait a very long time to get the mercy of the Lord. That is a quality of waiting, which is also a quality of surrender. One of the symptoms of surrender, as Bhaktivinoda writes in his Sharanagati, is to always wait for the Lord's mercy, or to expect the Lord's mercy. To expect the Lord's mercy is also to wait for the Lord's mercy. Waiting means you're waiting for something to happen. And if you are confident that it's going to happen, then you wait for it. It's worth waiting for. So Rupa Goswami also says, Utsahan nishchayad dharyat tat karma pavartanat. Utsahan nishchayad dharyat. Enthusiasm, confidence, and patience. These are three of the secrets in Upadeshamrita mentioned in the third verse to attain pure devotional service, tat-tat karma pravartana, sangat-yagat satovrte. Also to follow very strictly Vedic injunctions as we know them in the footsteps of the great souls and to avoid a bad association. But patience is, I think it's said, there's an English proverb, is a virtue. Patience is a virtue. In spiritual life, it's also very virtuous. Rupa Goswami explicated the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and that of Lord Krishna. He made it more plain, more clear, more easy to understand. We're very fortunate to have such a great, great soul as Rupa Goswami to tell us how Krishna consciousness can be applied, the secrets of Krishna consciousness. So he gives us this verse. Utsahan nishchayad dharyat. First, in order to achieve anything, even in the material world, you have to be enthusiastic. You have to want it to happen. You have to be sure and very eager. And it has to pervade your consciousness. Utsahan nishchayad dharyat. And confident that it's going to take place. And then when that confidence and enthusiasm is there, one can be patient and wait for it because one knows it's going to happen. So this is an extreme version for human beings of being patient, waiting for such a long time, 4,300,000,000 years, a very long time to wait. We think that sometimes A week or a year is a long time to wait. So Lord Brahma is in many ways, after meditating for thousands and millions of years, coming to this conclusion. And as Prabhupada says in the purport, Supreme Lord can be experienced only by the process of devotional service. Bhakti mama janati yavanyashtashmi tattoman tattuto gyatva vishate taranantramat. He says it also there in Bhagavad Gita. Bhakti mama vijanati. It's another way of saying that without the mercy of the Lord, unless we have His mercy, we can't actually advance in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes one endeavors with great difficulty and wonders why I'm not getting anywhere, or why it seems that I'm not getting anywhere. And one of the reasons that happens, there are many reasons, but one of the reasons is that there may be some, as Rupa Goswami also mentioned, some very deeply buried seeds of desire, of sinful activity that haven't been brought to the surface or confronted. There was the analogy in the story given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati of the boatman rowing all night and thinking he was making progress, only to find that in the morning the anchor had been lodged in the bottom of the riverbed and the boat didn't go anywhere. So that anchor, the rope and the anchor, are compared to attachments in the material world in that metaphor. We're attached to something in the material world. We work very strenuously to make progress, but because those bijas or seeds have not been, as Rupa Goswami says, they haven't been fried, they haven't been made impotent, they inhibit forward progress, even though it appears that with great endeavor one is trying and should make progress. And of course there are other reasons. The Lord may withhold His mercy. He may not be satisfied. And in all cases, the Lord has the prerogative to withhold or dispense His mercy as He pleases. He's not obliged, like we are, to serve. As human beings, we're obliged to serve the Lord in every way. But Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is never obliged to anyone. So He may withhold His mercy. Sometimes material things are withheld, and that is actually a good sign. If someone's trying to make spiritual progress but there's none made, sometimes I'm thinking, well, I don't have the material necessities that I need. Sometimes such things are also withheld. Sometimes we've read that when there are great Raja Rishis ruling the land, there's no bad weather, no pestilence, no fighting, the weather is always perfect, the crops are always growing, the hills are always full of jewels and herbs, and all the necessities for life are in plenty. And then, when there's an evil ruler, like Venu, or like some of the minor rulers of today that are not following Brahminical principles, in fact are working against Brahminical principles in many ways, knowingly or unknowingly, then some of the bounty of the earth is withheld. So we understand that the earth is controlled by Mother Bhumi. And sometimes when there is a lot of lying and cheating, when the religious principles, mercy, cleanliness, mercy, austerity, are being withheld, then and there are a lot of lies. Sometimes the goddess of the earth withholds all of the bounties that are available for human beings in ordinary conditions. Ordinarily, we know from Ishopanishad, Om Purnam Maraha Purnam Idam, everything is present and available in full. There is enough for everyone. But sometimes there is restriction. Well, sometimes the Lord also, for reasons we may not know, will withhold His mercy. And the beauty of a Vaishnava or a devotee is to know that even though it may be withheld, there's actually a reason. There's a background reason for everything that happens, which we do not know. Therefore it is said, Prabhupada mentions here, that not by one's own personal endeavor or mental speculation can the Supreme Lord be experienced.
It's a very commonplace thing to think that somehow we can gain experience of the Lord just by our own experience. There was a gentleman who came to meet Prabhupada here. His name was Sir Alistair Hardy in 1976. And he was, I don't know if he's still alive, is he? Anyway, he was in charge of a college at Cambridge, and it was something like the Religious Experience Unit. I don't remember the exact name for it, but he had cataloged religious, what he called religious experiences, and he had this huge library of experiences from all over the world. But these types of experiences remain only letters in a book or shelves, books on shelves, and libraries full of words that don't actually gain the experience of the Supreme Lord. And it is said by Yamaraj as well that one cannot actually ascertain the supreme position or the actual position of the Supreme Lord by thoughts in the mind or by the senses or by any other means, by speculation. But one can only experience by devotional service. This is the only way we can actually understand who Krishna is. And of course, by mental speculation, it's clear that one cannot gain actual experience of the Supreme Lord. So Lord Brahma is giving an example of great tolerance in waiting, how to wait for a long time. There's a long, long period also. It's mentioned in an earlier verse how he, when he's meditating on the lotus, trying to ascertain the source of his existence, he hears the words ta and pa vibrated in the ether, vibrated in space. And from these words, ta and pa, he understands the meaning of everything. So one of the meanings of hearing such syllables, which signify tapasya, is that the purpose of human life, as Lord Rishabhdev says, tapo devyam putraka yena shadvam sudyad yasmat brahma shukam chirantam, is to engage in austerity. There's no other principle in human life. So what is that austerity? That austerity is knowing that the human life, as for the reason that we've come to enjoy it, is not actually a satisfactory position for a civilized human being. I'll just read that verse. It's in the second canto, chapter 6. That's not the one. In any case, the Lord was vibrating these syllables, and from this simple thing, just hearing two syllables, Lord Brahma was able to understand everything. One can understand everything by tapasya, and tapasya for a human being means devotional service. In our case, devotional service is fairly simple. It's a fairly simple thing. It means that we can engage in devotional service simply by chanting the Lord's holy name, by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, by associating with devotees, by serving a devotee or some devotees, and by trying to sanctify our existence by worshiping the deity. When these things take place, then devotional service becomes normal, and one becomes fixed in the understanding that devotional service is the only way by which I can advance in Krishna consciousness. Lord Brahma is also well known for his verse Prabhupada quotes in Bhagavad Gita, Tatenu Kampam Su Samikshamano Munjana Evatma Kripam Vipakam, which means that if one earnestly awaits for the Lord to bestow his causeless mercy upon him, all the while offering obeisances with body, mind, and words, patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, such a person is eligible to attain liberation because that is his rightful claim. So tolerance to tiksha is one of the decorations of a Vaishnava. It's one of the means by which we can advance, and it's also mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion that tolerance is the measure of strength in a human being. In the material world, it is almost entirely a matter of tolerating anomalies, things that are in the way of Krishna consciousness. And to advance in Krishna consciousness means to have to tolerate so many things. What to speak of the body itself, it has to be tolerated. One also will have to tolerate desires. It's explained in the Bhagavad Gita that desires, they just flow into the body, like rivers flow into the ocean. And when that ocean is calm, which it usually is, even though thousands of rivers flow into it, then we can understand the whole situation is very pacified. So similarly, there are millions of desires that are flowing into the mind and flowing into the senses and agitating the living being. When the living being can be peaceful, even though there is such an onslaught of desires, then one can be peaceful. So just trying to be good, entering into the mode of goodness, is never enough for the living being to be satisfied or happy. Prabhupada once told a story of how he was coming to the mail man or to the postmaster in Delhi when he was delivering his early writings, and it was back to Godhead magazine. So he was bringing it to the same man, and he noticed that it said back to Godhead on it. And he was wondering, he asked Prabhupada, why do you have to have God on this? If you do good, then you'll automatically be rewarded by the law of karma. You don't have to have God in the picture. It was a kind of preview into an emerging secular society a long time ago. So Prabhupada's rejoinder was, well, if you don't have God, you can't be good. You can try to be good, but you can't be good. So he was explaining that if one tries to be good in the material world, even though he may be moral and honest and obedient and responsible, all those things will not come to the motive of shuddha-sattva, or pure goodness. There will be goodness, but that goodness is always mixed with passion and ignorance, because the mode of goodness is always accompanied by the onslaught of passion and ignorance, which are the lower modes of life. And therefore, good is always accompanied by evil. There's always the duality in the material world. Just like thieves. Thieves will rob, then they'll say, well, we want to divide up the booty equally, morally. But what can be moral, because it's all stolen in the first place? And if someone fights in a foreign land, in the army, like the British used to go all over the world and fight, and they'd come back and get a big gold decoration if they were successful in killing many people. And if one person is killed in civil society, then you're either executed or jailed for life or hanged or in some way or other punished. So there's so many ways that morality and right is exercised in the material world, and it's full of duality. It's never clear. It's never known for sure what is right and what is wrong. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, it's very difficult to understand for most people, exercising the most difficult questions of right and wrong, how this huge war was fought. But ultimately, this is the treatise on right and wrong, that if we act for Krishna, even though it may appear from the material mode's point of view or any material point of view to be unacceptable or immoral, from the spiritual point of view, it's the right, the proper thing to do. There's a famous picture we see of Hiranyakashipu meditating and a fire is coming out of his head. He's standing in an anthill. His body's all being eaten away and his life airs are being kept going in the bones because of his great power. So at one time I was living in the temple in Los Angeles. We had some guests over for lunch, and this painting was up on the wall. And famous lady, an actress, was there, and we were eating, and then she, all of a sudden, she looked up at that picture. She said, "Are those ants?" Fortunately, we didn't have the picture of Hiranyakashipu's intestines being ripped out. But these things are very hard to understand unless one begins to understand the process of devotional service. How can it be considered moral, for example, that Hiranyakashipu is being ripped to pieces, and his son is standing there ready to garland the executioner, with just waiting with a garland. You know, what's moral? The son is going to garland the executioner of his father, the killer. So these are kind of extreme situations. But really what they tell us is that in order to understand what is right and what is good, Krishna has to be in the picture. Of course, the laws of the world, they tend to follow the laws of Manu or the higher order laws of the law of karma. But many times they do not. So in order to have a clear vision what the life of a Raja Rishi is and what human society is meant to do, Krishna has to be brought in the picture. So it is said in the Ishopanishad, Ishavasyamidam Sarvam, that everything that is animate and inanimate within the world is both controlled and owned by the Lord. And one should only accept those things which are set aside as is quoted, not other things, knowing well to whom they belong. So in that sense, every individual in this material world is a thief, just like the thieves who steal and then they try to divide everything up. So the whole world, because everything is actually Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, all the planets, everything is owned by Krishna, is thinking it's mine. Everyone who thinks that it's mine, or my countries, or my properties, my families, my communities, that's also a criminal thought, because Krishna is ultimately in control of everything. So these are the higher order laws of the universe, which Lord Brahma meditated on also for many, many millions of years, to come to the point of understanding that everything belongs to Krishna. And anyone who's not understanding that is, maybe unknowingly, but one becomes a thief. So everyone in the material world who's under this misconception that it is mine and I'm the owner is actually a thief and cannot actually attain to true morality. It's not actually waiting for the mercy of the Lord. And it is by the mercy of the Lord that one understands what is right and what is moral, what is to be done and what is not to be done. Otherwise, it's very difficult to know what is to be done and what is not to be done. In fact, we never know. The whole world is full of people asking questions and doing things and running hither and thither. Prabhupada once quoted somebody saying that if we look at the activity that takes place in the whole world, it's a matter of digging up piles of dirt, stacking them up somewhere, and then taking them away. Stacking and taking away. That's the whole material world. Just digging, making things and taking them away. Or buildings are being built and they're being torn down. Then new one's built and it's torn down and it's all taken away in a big pile of rubble. One who's spiritually attuned has a healthy cynicism about all this activity in the material world and sees that it's not really going anywhere or doing anything. It's just kind of going around in a circle. Where I'm based in Washington, D.C., there's a motorway that goes all the way around the city of Washington. It's about 60 miles long. It's like the M5? M25? It's probably about 100 miles or something like that, isn't it? And if you look at it, and there's just these huge lorries and cars day and night going both directions. And what are they doing? I mean, actually, you can hardly figure it out. They're delivering goods. They're going out to the movies. Who knows what they're doing? But they're just going and going, miles an hour, and getting in horrible accidents. I read one statistic, I don't know what it is in this country, but in America, 140 people die every single day in motor accidents. They either get hit by cars while they're walking or they're driving in a car. So it's not only not going anywhere, but it's also very dangerous. It's very dangerous to param param yadvi param natesham in this Kali Yuga, in this material world. As it is said, there is danger at every step. I'm going to read the purport from that verse, Tetam Nukam Pamsu Samikshamano, and it gives Sridhar Swami's view on it. Prabhupada's translation exactly is, "My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim." Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the personality of Godhead. This is Lord Brahma speaking, of course. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of God. The word susamikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee still may maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. That's also a very famous verse, Yasyaham Anugrahami Harishe Tadanamshanai, that Krishna takes away. He's known as Hari because he takes away those things which are obstacles, even though they may be materially beneficial to Krishna consciousness. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord, and therefore the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and to return home back to Godhead. A devotee sincerely desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord with his heart, words, and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardship a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes a legitimate son of God, as indicated here by the words Dayabhak. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the supreme pure Lord Krishna without undergoing a rigid purificatory process, which may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord. So, of course, Queen Kunti plays for many tribulations so that she will see the lotus feet of the Lord. And a devotee understands that so-called curses and misfortune is actually the blessing of the Lord. Does not see in terms of curses and blessings, but sees everything as actually this Dayabhak, Daya, the mercy of the Lord. And as Prahlad Maharaj says, such a person doesn't see things in terms of friends and enemies either. In fact, one who is spiritually astute begins to see that those who are acting as my enemies are actually my friends. Just like money. Money is our friend when we're holding it in our hand. And if the very same notes go into the hands of our enemy, it starts to use it against us. That money, we think, is our enemy. Similarly, when someone is very critical and inimical even, maybe our enemy, and says, oh, what you're doing is wrong, I don't think that it's right, and what you said is nonsense, and your behavior is abominable, and you shouldn't dress the way you do, and whatever they say, we take as something that hurts us. But actually such persons, from a devotee's point of view, are real friends, because they're telling us what's wrong with us. Now, it may not be fair, just, or right all the time, but still, we take it that this is Krishna's mercy. He's telling me what's wrong with me, how I can improve. And someone who's my friend, you're doing great, that was a fantastic class you gave, or that was a wonderful service you performed, you're doing so fabulous. They can actually be seen as our enemies, because there's a phrase, don't damn me with faint praise. If people are surrounded by such admirers or flatterers, Prabhupada called them sycophants once, then they dull our intelligence, don't they? Because they make us think that we're all right, we're okay, we own everything, we're in control, we're making automatic progress. So this whole idea of friends and enemies, as Prahlad Maharaj explains, is a very dangerous and erroneous concept. And to think that those who are enemies are actually our friends and our friends are enemies is a very intelligent way to look at things sometimes, to help us advance in the course of Krishna consciousness, as is stated here. one should see whatever happens, it's happening to me for a reason. It may not be very pleasant, but Krishna is doing it for a reason. And it is said it's a very small price to pay. What is this body anyway? It's only here for a short time. It's getting diseased. It's going to go, and we have to start all over again. So if it has to suffer something, adibhutak, adibhotak, adidaivik, whatever, may internal suffering or suffering from other people or just plain bad luck, as they call it, it's actually very good for us. It's the way a devotee advances in Krishna consciousness. So it's said if you raise a child and you never chastise him, you never discipline him, he'll grow up to be a first-class rogue. And if you discipline, then the person can grow up very, very nice, very well-behaved. So Krishna sometimes does this. It's not, you know, it's karma, but it's the Lord actually acting upon us very nicely. At the same time, one shouldn't take that because Krishna had to fight in a battle and because Lord Rishabhdev wandered around naked, and so many great souls did things which are very unconventional socially and unapproved. Jadvarat just sat in a field, wouldn't talk to anybody. That these are the ways that we should behave. Srila Prabhupada has discussed this and written about it, and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita he makes one statement in his purports that there are many great sages and rishis in the past who have lived far outside the convention. That one can claim the higher morality all the time of that one can claim the higher morality all the time of Krishna's law. I had an experience once when I was living here that reminded me of this. I was driving at night and getting ready to make a right turn. And when you're making a right turn, you're supposed to wait for the cars to pass, right? And this car was making a left turn like this. I don't remember exactly how it happened, but I sort of started out too fast, and so he was coming the other way, and it was a very close, and he was a Sikh, I guess, wearing a turban, so he just went by very fast, and too fast to really sit for anything to be said. But in that very short time that we were passing, the two windows were close together, he said, "You're a disgrace to your religion." I mean, you know, he just saw immediately that I was, like I saw his, he was had a turban, I saw I was shaved up. "You're a disgrace to your religion." And I realized, you know, if I just waited another few seconds, I hadn't been so impatient, he wouldn't have said anything. But it really makes you think that little things like that, it's like the verse Prabhupada was quoted, the black spot on the white tablecloth, it becomes very, very conspicuous. So that behavior by devotees should always be, you know, very pukka, as we say. Even though we know that Krishna's morality is the highest morality. So I'll read the verse again. Kalena soja purusha yushabhi pavritta yogena viruddha bodha svayam tarantaridaye vibhatam apashyata pashyata yanna puranam yapurvam. At the end of Brahma's 100 years, when his meditation was complete, he developed the required knowledge. And as a result, he could see in his heart the Supreme within himself, who he could not see before with the greatest endeavor. Finish the class and questions no later than 8:30 a.m./p.m. So it ends at 8:30. Pardon? 10. Okay, 10 minutes. So can I have some questions? Yes.
Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of King Vyayati, I was reading a very nice, very interesting book that really confused me from Srimad Prabhupada. At the end of the life of King Vyayati, he enjoyed sense gratification for 100 years with Devayani. And at the end of his life, he went back home, back to Gaudiya. Prabhupada in the purport, he gave also the example of Dhruva Maharaj.
Dhruva, right.
That he was meditating on the Lord, but with Kutiri mentality, that the Lord will show his mercy after 6 months with the conscience head.
Right.
Then he said, we cannot grasp even the plans of the mercy of the Lord, how it works. Sometimes we perform devotional service and we don't get any mercy. He said that unless we are favored by the Lord, even though we perform devotional service, we cannot achieve mercy.
Mm.
I was wondering myself, so what really do we have to do in order to be favored by the Lord?
Well, first of all, Hare Krishna. This is Ramachandra, Gornitai, Radha Gokul and Nandakijai. First of all, we can't imitate great souls like King Yati or Dhruva Maharaj. And there's the notion that we can be like, we can imitate. And there's a tendency for us to imitate and not actually follow. So there's a gulf of difference between following in the footsteps of and imitating. Sometimes people wonder, who's this Lord Brahma? You know, he sometimes had these, you know, illusions and tried to fool Krishna and did other things. But he's Lord Brahma. And, you know, we can't imitate Lord Brahma because he's greater than we are. So similarly, Yayati and Dhruva Maharaj, we cannot imitate them. And this is another way to manifest, to understand the manifestations of the Lord's mercy. The Lord always has the prerogative, always has the right, because he's independent. Otherwise, what's the meaning of being independent? Krishna's two Bhagavans. Independent means he can do whatever he wants. He's not obliged. I mean, generally, by following Vaidhi Bhakti, we get the mercy of Krishna. I think all of us have experienced that. But sometimes we think we're not making enough progress, or this happened, or that happened, and there's a tendency to think that it's not progress and we're not getting the mercy of the Lord. But actually, we are getting the mercy of the Lord. Even though it may appear we're not, just as we were saying, sometimes we have to pay. These are all examinations or prices that, you know, are being suddenly put on. We thought, well, it was a lower price, but then someone put a higher price on it. Well, in the material world, that's illegal. But for Krishna, because he's independent, if he wants to jack up the price in the middle of the purchase, he's not breaking any laws, because he is the law. He's above all the law, and he is ultimately the law of everything, higher than all the laws of the laws of karma, the laws of the universe. So, to get the mercy of the Supreme Lord, we have to engage in pure devotional service. But there's no guarantee that we'll get it. I mean, generally we do get it. But if Krishna had to give it to us, he wouldn't be independent. But generally he does. Therefore we're here, trying to get more. Yes?
You were saying earlier on that just said Ashina that even if you're in devotion and performing devotional service, Krishna still may withhold his mercy due to the unfructification of the seed of sin that we have committed. Sometimes we have to do it. What if Krishna's pure devotee has another desire to give us his mercy? Because Krishna succumbs to the desire of his pure devotee.
Right. That's another way we get the mercy. Just like people go to Vrindavan this time of year, because it's known that Radharani dispenses her mercy without any consideration of the time, place, and personalities involved, without any qualification. So whenever we see her in this gesture, this actually has a meaning. It means two things, Prabhupada said. It means everything is all right. It's a blessing. And it also means please accept this nice devotee because this person is a greater devotee than I am. So that is as unqualified mercy that just gushing out like the rain. It falls on the rocks and the ocean as well as in the forest and the crops. That's another way that Krishna's mercy, it's another manifestation of Krishna's supreme independence. And a way in which if Krishna's devotee recommends somebody, then even though the person may be a hopeless case, then Krishna's going to, because Krishna's a person, Krishna has thoughts and feelings just like we do, and if this person is very dear to Krishna and he's recommending somebody, then Krishna's very disposed to accept that person. And that's why millions of people go to Vrindavan during Kartik, because they know that Radharani is going to dispense her mercy without any consideration this time. Yes?
Maharaj, you were saying how by praising someone, you can actually be very harmful in a spiritual way. However, for myself, I see that if I'm always criticizing others, or I can see the fault very easily in others, that's what Maharaj calls it, seeing the good. I feel that if I can actually see the good in others, then it'll be emanated in actually trying to praise them rather than trying to.
Yeah. It's also said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Valisheshu Dvishatsuchat, that the Majjhima Adhikari sees the masses of people as innocent. That's the vision that Lord Chaitanya has meant for us to adopt, that we should see that not in terms of, you know, demons and devotees, although that exists, but we should see in our attitude, the way we carry ourselves, is that everyone is innocent, everyone is a potential devotee, and everyone is a mamai vamso jiva loke, part and parcel of Krishna. So in that way, everyone should feel, you know, welcome. They should be induced. They should have easy access to Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada does say that. He in some conversations and letters, he said the devotee should only see the good in people. It doesn't mean that we are ignorant about their shortcomings or the evil in the world. Quite the contrary. But at the same time, the attitude is one of seeing the good. Yeah, that's a very good point. I think time's one more.
It's about the translation.
Mm-hmm.
Lord Ramana, the 100 now, if you meditate for 100 years, where do we fit into all that?
Yeah. Well, those who are in the demigod form of life are sometimes, and they did many times, interested in the earth planet, because in the Kali Yuga, that is, especially, because at that time one can go back to God in a very short period of time. Because from their point of view, if their span is very long, they would see people being born, dying, going back to Godhead, born, dying, going back very quick, the devotees. So sometimes that's one of the reasons they want to take birth on earth, so they can go back to Godhead just by chanting. They don't have to engage in such difficult meditation, because that's the Yuga Dharma. And of course, when Lord Chaitanya was here, they came in different disguise, demigods, to just get his association. So this is the special dispensation in Kali Yuga. One can just chant the Hare Krishna mantra in that way and go back to Godhead very easily. That's our recommended method. It's not meditation like in Satya Yuga. So, yeah.
He lives for 100 years. So after the meditation, I'm not understanding that.
And how does he do other things while he's meditating?
Yeah.
Oh, he can do lots of things at the same time. He's got four heads. Very intelligent boy. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.